言える。
お
お。おや、そうスーさん、さっき。
うん？
スー。ルイージ、ウィヤマンバー、ポエ、ハッポー。やぼやぼ、ほっほっほっ。おいどろ、ゲール、スー、スクスク、シケシケ。
What is up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the voices, Tim Mason. Here with me, I've got Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? Tim, I think we need to choose a different day to record the show because it always cuts into my AEW wrestling Wednesday nights, which is like my favorite thing to do now during the week. Love it.
I am down. If our other host, Patrick Murphy, is.
What does AEW stand for? I know WWE and WCW. What is AEW?
American Elite Wrestling. Now, I know this is off topic, but every time I mention something that seems off topic, I bring it up for a reason. I really want someone to make a video game, like a wrestling video game for this specific wrestling league. And I want it to get released on the Switch because the recent wrestling game, the WWE 2K20, whatever it is a complete mess. And like I grew up as a wrestling fan, and I've been on and off watching wrestling for my whole entire life, and I haven't been watching wrestling for a while, but I used to play all the wrestling games, especially the THQ games back in the day, especially on the N64, and I love those games. So I really hope that somebody makes a wrestling game that's similar to those N64 games growing up, like Nitro or WCW NWO Revenge, like those games, and releases it on Nintendo Switch. Because I think Nintendo Switch is a perfect console for one of those wrestling games.
We've got to talk. You've got to explain to me the appeal of wrestling. Because I don't get it, but...
Oh, man, you know what? If you want to understand the appeal of wrestling, what you need to do is you need to start watching some wrestling documentaries. There are so many fantastic wrestling documentaries. And you'll get to understand the drama that happens behind closed doors. You know what I mean? Wrestling fans... It's not always necessarily about the action and the drama unfolding in the ring or on camera. It's also about the stuff that you don't see, the behind the scenes. I just love it. I love it. And I'm telling you, some of the best documentaries I've ever watched are all wrestling documentaries.
There was a recent one on Ric Flair. I think 30 for 30 did a Ric Flair documentary, right?
Right, yeah. They actually have, I think it's like a 4-disc... documentary series on Ric Flair, but the thing is, like, it was released by the WWE, and so those documentaries are still entertaining and good, but because it's released by the company, you know, that owns the WWE, you're not going to get any sort of like negative press. You're not going to like really they're not going to zone in on all of the really controversial things that happen behind the scenes. But right. If you watch some of the smaller documentaries made by independent filmmakers, man, like, they're amazing. Like the Jake the Snake one, the Bret Hart one. Recently, I reviewed one about Vampiro on the website, which is so good. But Tim, did you never play those wrestling games on the N64? Because they were amazing.
No, I never did.
Oh, man, that's all I used to do. I told this story once on the podcast. The reason why it took me so long to play Ocarina of Time was because my cousin and I had a wrestling league, because we used to play all of the wrestling games released on the N64, right? And so we had a league, and we would keep track of wins and losses and, like, ties, and we would have, like, our pay-per-view events. So whenever there was an actual WrestleMania happening in real life, we would have our own WrestleMania the day before. It was, like, this big thing with me and my friends and my family. Like, it was, like, I love those games, and I wish to God they would go back to making one of those games.
That sounds incredibly cool, like having a giant event with all your friends. And actually keeping a score, that's so fun.
And I'm not alone. Like, a lot of people consider No Mercy and WCW NWO Revenge, like, two of the best games of that generation.
Yeah, absolutely do. Yeah, that's all. that's a good reason to change dates. But Patrick, how have you been?
I've been good. I just started playing something for review, but I won't be able to talk about that until next week.
Embargo!
Well, yeah, it's a little indie game. Plus, I've only just started playing it, so I don't really feel comfortable in my impressions just yet. I'm only about like an hour in.
Does it start with the word pokey?
No, it doesn't. That would be nice to tease everybody. Why would we ever have me review Pokemon? That would be Tim 100%. It's a little indie game. I always, every month I scour Nintendo's upcoming games for little indies that I think might be, that look interesting, you know? And I contact the developers if nobody else has, you know, asked for a code or anything like that, just to see if I like to try these things out and give these people some shout outs. There's been some indies that I've, you know, fiercely defended in the past and try to sort of stir up. I love when I find one that I think is great. And, you know, I think I'll be talking about one later on in the podcast.
That you might. So this week should be a really fun one. We're kind of all over the place. The heart of the segment is Luigi's Mansion 3, which Patrick reviewed for the site. Check that out on Goombastomp right now. But I've also been playing it. I've got my own thoughts, and I'm really, really excited to compare notes with Patrick. Rick has been playing a little game called After Party, which is how we're going to start the show. And then we're going to end with a discussion of co-op puzzle games. So, Rick, After Party.
Yeah, so I love this game. I actually wrote a review, and the headline of my article reads, "The Best Hangover I've Had in Years." Now, longtime listeners might remember me raving about a game called Oxenfree, which was released on the Nintendo Switch last year. I love that game. It's one of my favorite games on the Switch, hands down. So, After Party is the new game from Night School Studio, who also made Oxenfree.
And Tim, you played Oxenfree, right? I didn't, but...
Yeah, I did. It's actually one of the few walking sims that I got into, because entirely, like, the atmosphere and the narrative I thought was really, really cool, and it was just short enough that I never got bored or uninterested. If you keep the center of your game an interesting narrative, I don't mind a walking sim, apparently.
Yeah, well, I think you might like this game. It's not quite as good as Oxenfree, but it's still really, really good. What I love about the game is the actual premise. It's got a really clever premise. Basically, it follows two best friends named Lola and Milo, and they wake up in hell. So apparently they died. They don't know how they died. They don't know why they died. And more importantly, they don't know why they ended up in hell, as per se heaven or wherever, right? And so they have no recollection of how they got there, and they're convinced it was a huge mistake. And so they venture off looking for a way out of hell. So you play the two characters, much like you play multiple characters in the game Oxenfree, and you walk around and you have to talk to demons and humans who are also sentenced to live their afterlife in Satan's backyard. And eventually you learn of a loophole that can send Milo and Lola back home. All you have to do is outdrink the Prince of Darkness, Satan himself. It's a really, really clever premise. Like, the entire time I was playing the game, I kept on thinking that this would make an excellent film. Like, an excellent movie.
The premise you've described sounds like a cross between The Good Place and, like, South Park's version of hell.
The Good Place is a good starting point in terms of, like, trying to find, like, comparison points, but I was actually thinking of the classic film The Seventh Seal. Mm-hmm. I bet, like, 99.9% of our listeners have no idea what that movie is, but anyways.
Max von Sydow.
Yeah. So, like, the thing about this game, it is, like Tim said, it's a walking sim. And so right away, a lot of people are just not going to be interested in playing it. It's very dialogue heavy. Like, it's, I mean, it's no different than Oxenfree, but if you like Oxenfree, like, you'll be happy to learn that the brand of comedy, the colorful, eccentric characters, the witty dialogue is also present in this game. And like Oxenfree, it's a single-player, point-and-click, dialogue-driven experience in which you control these two characters and you shift between their perspectives as you walk around hell. But it's really, really, really good. The reason why I don't like it as much as Oxenfree is because as you meet people, you're given a choice, right? It's like basically bubbles will pop up with like dialogue options, like how, and you basically have to decide how you want to respond to whoever it is you're speaking to, right? And now in Oxenfree, depending on what you choose, it can change the outcome of the story. And there's multiple endings in Oxenfree, right? So, you know, depending on how you speak to people, how you react, your mood, your temper, et cetera, you can get one of like multiple endings. But it also changes the course of the journey. So it's not just about the ending, it's about the whole entire like 4 to 6 hour story. The thing about this game, I don't really think it matters what you choose. It might change the way a character interacts with you within that specific scene. It might maybe change your personality. Maybe your character will be more aggressive. Maybe your character will be a little bit more confident. Maybe your character will be like very shy, but it doesn't actually change the end results. And so I found that somewhat disappointing because, like, for example, like I actually went back and I replayed a few scenes choosing different options, right? So instead of responding to someone with, say, option A, I would respond with option B or C, but it didn't really change anything. Like, all it did really was change how the character behaves. Because in the game, what's really cool about the game is like you have to go from like one bar to the next bar to the next bar. So you go to like a bar, like a watering hole, and then you go to like more of a discotheque. And every time you go to one of these bars, you meet different characters and you have to go to the bar and actually order drinks. And so when you order drinks, there's different drinks on the menu. And whatever drink you decide to choose to drink changes your personality. So like you can take a drink that makes you like, again, very confident, or you can make a you can drink something that makes you a little bit more shy or awkward. And so the drinks that you choose will affect how you interact with people. But again, the story at large, it doesn't seem to have any greater effect on what happens towards the end of the game. I think there might be two endings, maybe three, but I don't know, for example, if there's an ending in which you can actually get out of hell. When I finished the game, I was still in hell. Like, I never got out. And that might be because of the choices I made. I'm not entirely sure. But it's a really cool game. It's got great characters. I'm sure you've seen the trailer or you've seen screenshots. It looks gorgeous, right? Like, it has a bright neon color palette to it. So, you know, like, the kind of stuff you would see in movies like Drive, for example. And the soundtrack is fantastic because it's the same guy who did the music for Oxenfree. So everything about this game is fantastic. I just wish the choices mattered more.
And that's kind of the way the choice-based games usually are, right? Like, it always feels like they're still guiding you no matter what. It's really hard to do a true choice-based game, I feel like, because you have to account for so much. And the more you account for, the shallower your story can actually be, because have you ever read a choose-your-own-adventure book? And they usually have like 20 different ways that the character can go, but the stories are all super short because accounting for 20 different paths actually means, you know, you can't take your time to develop any one of those paths really full. It's always a tough thing. And I mean, does it feel, at least if the interactions are different, you maybe kind of feel like you have your own personal adventure, even if the story at large is the same.
So here's the thing. So one of my favorite games of all time is Life is Strange. Now, Life is Strange has, I think, three endings, maybe two. But the story, like the journey, there are moments in which, for example, someone can die. And So maybe it doesn't change the outcome of episode 5, like the very end of the story. But it does, you know, kill off a character who you might have some sort of emotional connection to. So it's like watching a TV show and your favorite character dies. And that's because of a choice you made. This game does not have that. And what's weird is what I wrote in my review is, it's funny because the game takes place in hell. The two characters are dead and they're trying to like come back to life, right? So you would think that a game like this can raise its stakes, but it doesn't. Like, there's no suspense. Like, and it like, the thing is, it's because it's like a big, huge party. You go around, you drink, you get drunk, you meet people, you have these awkward interactions with total strangers that you meet for the very first time, but it never feels like any of the characters are in danger. And that's the difference between After Party and a game like Oxenfree. But It's a really fun game. Like, for example, they have their own version of Twitter in the game. And so you're supposed to, like, by the way, the version of Twitter is called Bicker. So it's like Hell's version of Twitter.
That's the actual version of Twitter, as far as
exactly. I know, and that's what I find like really funny about it, because like I feel like Twitter is like hell. But unsurprisingly, there's a lot of drinking to do in After Party, and like I said, each drink.
You were about to say there's a lot of drinking to do on Twitter.
No. Well, yeah, that too. But each drink opens a new dialogue option, and depending on your choice, you can either make Lola or Milo more charming or less likable. And there's one drink, for example, I thought this was the coolest. So Milo took a drink, and he actually puked out his conscience. So you have to go around. Yeah. Stuff like that I thought was really, really clever.
Now, if you choose to have their personalities be a certain way, how does that affect the game outside of just their interactions are different? Like, do you solve puzzles because he's shyer this time? Or more confidence makes you be able to go walk through a door that you wouldn't be able to walk through?
No, you have to go and you have to try to find a few demons. Like there's two or three demons which you have to locate. And if you can beat them in whatever game they choose for you to beat them in, then you acquire a seal. Once again, bringing up the connection to the seventh seal. And if you get enough seals, like two or three seals, then you basically can get a ticket into Satan's After Party, because it's like a private party. It's like a, you know, it's in order to get in, you need to been invited, right? You can't just walk into Satan's like After Party.
No, the guy so, rules the underworld. I mean, you got to be on the list.
For sure. So there's like these mini games. And for example, you can play beer pong. And so one of the demons I meet at, I think it was a sports bar, I start talking to the demon, and eventually the demon challenges me to a game of like beer pong. And if I win, then I will get a seal. But every time you play the game, and like, let's say you miss, right? You don't get the ball into the cup. You have to take a drink. But when you take the drink, the screen will start, it'll start getting fuzzy and it'll wobble. Like as if like it's your point of view, like you are drunk. You know how when you're drunk, you can't see properly and like things move. So that's what's cool about it. Like the screen will actually change. And so you're trying to get the ball. Like it's this little mini game within the game. You're trying to get the ball into the cup in order to win the game. So you acquire the seal so you can hopefully get the ticket into Satan's After Party. So like really, really clever ideas. Again, I want to know if the people who work at Night School Studio, I want to know if they worked in TV or if they worked in the film industry prior to making video games, because it seems like they're the best at making these cinematic video games.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like Oxenfree was. And like you say, this could be a film or even maybe a TV series, you know, a la The Good Place, trying to get out of hell and trying to do whatever, you know, it takes.
Yeah, I really love the characters too. Like you go and you visit like a cocktail lounge, and you like you meet this character. He's like a demon and he's looking for someone else. It turns into sort of like a little mini detective game, and you're trying to locate this missing person. And then when you do find the person that he's looking for, they take him to court. And it turns out that the guy is actually innocent, or at least he claims he's innocent, and he does not belong in hell. And so he's in court because they're trying to decide if he's innocent and belongs in hell, or if they should send him back to Earth. And then you have to make a choice. Do you want to try to prove his innocence, or do you want to try to help the prosecution into winning the case, so therefore they will determine that he is guilty and he will end up being kept in hell and tortured for the rest of his life? And so you have to make that choice. Now, it's kind of cool, but again, that choice really does not impact the rest of the story.
Sure.
But there's this one really cool character who's a taxi driver, because the game has like six different areas that you have to visit, or it could be five, could be mistaken. And so you have to take a cab from one area to the next area. And when you're riding with her, she will talk to you, and you'll get to learn things about hell and her and learn things about yourself, right? But there's this other character who is basically sort of represents your internal personal demons. Like she is assigned as your personal demon. And so she follows the two characters, Milo and Lola. She follows them around for the entire game. And every so often, she'll give you an update on the choices you made. And she tries to make you feel like you're a bad person. And when she does give you the update about the choices you make, there's mini flashbacks to their life. And sort of like, it's not anything major. It's not like, I don't know, they were abused when they were kids or anything. It's more like little hangups. Like, their relationship with their siblings, or the fact that when they were in school, they were like socially awkward and they didn't have many friends. And so there are these mini flashbacks, but again, it's nothing drastic or life changing. It's just kind of like to give you more of an understanding and a glimpse of who they are. Anyhow, I think it's a really, really good game. I finished it in like, I think 6 hours. The only thing is this game is not yet out on the Nintendo Switch. I do believe it's going to get released soon. I was told 2019, but it could be 2020. So all in all, if you like Oxenfree, I think you will really like this game.
So it reminded me of The World's End when you were describing it.
Oh my God. I don't know if I wrote that in my review, but I think I did. I think I mentioned that movie.
Because it's the best movie.
The pub crawl.
Yeah, basically anything by Edgar Wright is the best movie, but I digress. That sounds pretty interesting. I might check that out.
Okay, but here's the thing, Tim. If you can play this game with a friend or your wife and actually drink while playing the game, I think it'll be a total blast. Because every time you take a drink in the game, if you take a drink in real life, I can imagine you being completely pissed drunk by the end of the game.
So if you want to get bombed, Tim...
Sounds like that time I played Super Smash Bros.
I smell a Game Boys podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I don't know if we've done an episode about drinking games, but the idea has been tossed around if we haven't. But yeah, this one seems like a very suitable candidate. So yeah, check that out when it finally does drop. And how's that for an introduction? Rick, you've been working really, really hard on the site. You've got a couple of personal things going on. So not only are you about to leave the show for the night while Patrick and I take the reins and try our best not to crash this thing, you're going to take a couple weeks off of NXPress. You should be back by the end of the year, but November, you're going to be missing in action. So
yeah, I'm going to take about 6 weeks off. I think I really just wanted to make a quick appearance on the podcast to talk about After Party, because I think it's a game people should check out. It's really, really good, especially, like I said, if you like Oxenfree. I'm going to take some time off, about 6 to 7 weeks. I'm going to come back at the end of the year, and I'm going to join you and Patrick for the big end of the year party in which we announce what we think are the best games released on a Switch and maybe the Christmas episode. But yeah, I got a bunch of things that I'm trying to take care of. And now seems like a really good time for me to take some time off, because really the only big game coming out between now and the end of the year is Pokemon. And as you well know, I don't care about Pokemon. Can we just quickly mention before I leave that the Nintendo Switch Lite, which, by the way, I gave a great review of on the website and on the podcast, it is selling like crazy. They sold 2 million units in like less than 30 days. That's insane.
Before the holiday season, yeah.
And that is a better number than the actual Nintendo Switch when it was released at launch.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what happens with Pokemon, which has been traditionally a portable. Anyway, Rick, take care of yourself. We'll miss you on the show, but he'll be close at hand. And look out for him on Goomba Stomp, where he's literally always got something going on. But take care, buddy.
Hell basically runs itself nowadays. Yeah, I have to assign torches and clean up priest skeletons every once in a while, but people typically know what to expect. Except, well, these two morons I keep hearing about. Milo and Lola. They're friends their whole lives that then go and die like 2 minutes before graduating college. They go through processing, get their personal deal and the whole thing. But then they take a cab ride from Sam. And she goes and blabs about the loophole. Like I didn't already have enough to do tonight, you know? I told them to outdrink Hell's monarchs first. You know, my psycho relatives. But to even reach those nut jobs, the losers will have to deal with karaoke crowds, the lava swamps, the fanatics from the Fourth Circle. I mean, these complete idiots really have no idea what they're getting into.
I need a drink.
Is he talking to us?
Welcome back to NXPress. We're at our main event, a discussion of Luigi's Mansion 3, finally out on the Switch. came out on Halloween Day. I don't know how I feel about that choice. While it's a fitting day to release a Luigi's Mansion game, I was very, very busy celebrating the holiday with lots of trick-or-treating and fun family photos. But the moment I turned my eyes to this game, Patrick, this thing, you were not underselling it, or excuse me, you were not overselling it. It's exceptional. This game is incredible.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I've looked online since it's come out, and I've seen a lot of reactions, and there are some people who are kind of mad at it. You know, they're it's so-so, and maybe it's not as... A lot of people... I get that there's nostalgia for the original Luigi's Mansion, and I get that it had a certain vibe, but gameplay-wise, my God, is it so much less than what Next Level has put into these games. But anyway, Tim, is it... First of all, let's just talk right off the bat. Like, this is a gorgeous game. This might be one of the best-looking games on the Switch.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning-looking. The lighting effects, all incredible. I feel like the hotel itself feels real somehow. It's like cartoonish.
But tactile.
It's very tactile.
Everything feels very touchable. Like, everything feels like there is an actual material that it's been made out of. Which is a very cool thing.
It's a good thing, too, because that's like one of the highlights and the features of the game is so much of the game is impressionable. You can touch it. You can mess around with this hotel lobby and every single bathroom. You cannot check inside the toilet seat. I don't know why, but you can. So it's,
And sometimes you have to. Almost everything. One of the biggest things about this game that had me just completely wrapped up in it was how interactive everything is. And if you're looking for a difference as to why I praise the Next Level versions of these games more so than the original Luigi's Mansion, which for the time was great, right? It's the level of interactivity with nearly every single object that makes this just puts it on a whole other level. And I'm not going to say takes it to the next level. but they really have just expanded upon what they did with Dark Moon and having a bunch of interactivity. You know, if you people think back to the original Luigi's Mansion, and you could move shower curtains aside and maybe some drapes and stuff like that, but your vacuum really didn't interact with the objects in the room, not that much, other than make them vibrate a little bit. But here it's completely different. Like, it's... everything can be sucked in or smashed or blown away or furled up or unfurled or taken with a suction cup and again yanked and smashed to pieces, yanked open, whatever. There's every single object and there, and every room is so packed with objects. It's just, I don't know, it's a fun house. It's a huge, it's a big sandbox that every room is like its own little mini sandbox. I shouldn't say big sandbox because it's not an open world or anything like that. It's just every room is like its own little diorama mini sandbox that you can play around in. And these rooms are just absolutely jam-packed with secrets everywhere. Almost every action you perform, you are rewarded for in some way. And I love that.
I think that saying that they're jam-packed with secrets, that undersells, again... this game has layers upon layers upon layers, and there have been so many times where I would start solving a puzzle that I had found some sort of like hidden something or other, only to realize that it is creating a reaction somewhere else in this same room, and then I have to switch between Luigi and Luigi, and I'm solving some different puzzle up above or something like that. It's incredible. I don't understand. Not only like is it incredibly layered, so that there's always something to discover, but it all feels like it would actually naturally fit within this hotel. Like, spatially, the game has blown my mind countless times over, just in its sense of space and the depth that you find every single place that you are.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that I was so impressed by was every room is gorgeous, right? It's gorgeous to look and see all the different objects. And so many on each floor and in so many rooms, specific rooms, the objects are specific to that room or floor, and they're specific to the theme of that room or floor. And so it really makes things feel like there's not just a bunch of generic sheaves of paper lying around, right? Like, that's what Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon could sometimes have, even though it was a lot of fun, and a lot of places did have specific stuff, objects in the room, but they were usually directly involved with puzzles. In this case, it's like there's so many things. Everybody's room has so much personality. So if you go into Mario's room, it's got Mario stuff in it. And it's got things that suggest stuff about Mario's personality. Same with Princess Peach. Same with Luigi's own room. Same with all the other random rooms, like bedrooms that are in this place. And that's only on the second floor.
This game does call into question Luigi's character, as he immediately ran into Princess Peach's room and just looted, borderline looted everything she had. And she had a lot of stuff that you would expect, a bunch of gold.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I hope Mario doesn't see this.
A lot of money and jewels in Peach's room.
Yeah.
That to me was why I called it the best looking Luigi's Mansion game, even without the HD, because the design of every room is so meticulous. And those layers that you're talking about, a lot of times these objects are made to disguise the layers. So as you're absolutely ransacking rooms, and I wrote in my review that sometimes Luigi's Mansion 3 can feel like a hotel burglar simulation, because you're absolutely rifling through everything, right, for anything valuable.
Yes.
In every single room you run across, and you're smashing things open, glass cases, and breaking, taking all the jewels and all this other kind of stuff. But those objects do such a great job at hiding other objects, or hiding a part of the wall that can actually be, ripped off to reveal something, or hiding, things are capped that you take the caps off and Luigi can maybe go through a pipe that leads you to another room. Like, bathrooms tend to have stuff like that. There's just so many things you have to keep a watch out for. And the rooms are so packed. Brilliantly, they've packed them so it doesn't make everything super obvious. Because if they didn't have these rooms just stuffed with things to give it personality, but it would telegraph the locations of some of the puzzles a little bit better. And so I think they just did a wonderful job of making you want to interact with everything, because you know that you're uncovering more and more and more. And there are, like you said, there's layers. There's puzzles upon puzzles upon puzzles. And the easy puzzles will net you a little reward. The medium puzzles net you a medium reward. And the really tricky ones will get you one of those gems, usually, or whatever else you need to get, like a key or something.
Yeah. And, man, some of those puzzles, some of them took me a while, and I refused to move to the next floor until I have all of those gems. So there was, I would say, a good 40 minutes where I was just on one of the floors, just rummaging, trying to figure out where I was supposed to be, where to even begin to find this last gem.
And a couple had me stumped, and I had to review the game, so I had to move on. But I will say, one of the pleasures, too, was after I beat the game and knew that I could write my review, I liked going back to the previous floors to go hunt down gems. I always liked that, Luigi. I liked it in Dark Moon. Going back and remembering all the great floors that came before and all the really, really cool stuff that came before while I hunted down the gems with some of my further knowledge of how puzzles worked. I want to mention this really quick, and I know I've been talking a lot here, Tim, so I'm going to cede it over to you, because it sounds like you've been enjoying it as well. But one of the things that I love about this game is how they subtly teach you puzzles, how to solve their puzzles, without making anything super obvious. Subtly teach you how to solve some of their harder puzzles by showing you less hard versions of those puzzles earlier or even later. And so an example that I wrote about in my review is that you can walk up to almost any sink, or like you said, a toilet, but any sink, and you can turn the tap, right? And it'll be a button prompt that allows you to do this. However, there are fixtures in other bathrooms all over the house that also have taps, but there's no button prompt when you walk up to them, or you can't reach over. Sometimes there are spas, sometimes there's a shower, like a claw tub and a shower. And just by instilling, you walk up to a sink and you turn it on, you might get a few bills of some cash, or you might get a few coins, right? No big deal. You don't really get a whole lot out of that. But it instills the idea that taps can be turned. And so later on, when you see a tub that just seems to be in the background, mind its own business, or a spa, you know, or something like that, try turning those taps. But you're going to have to figure out a different way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it also might take you 40 minutes to figure out where you're supposed to be, and then to realize that that one small detail had eluded you, and then you are questioning, can I just vacuum? Yes, you can. And that's the kind of stuff that just has blown my mind continually, especially when it's that kind of stuff that you like tried it earlier, but once you've done some intricate amount of other steps, then suddenly the interaction is active, and it's just, it's so well thought out. I just want to be in a room and see the men and women coming up with these crazy, crazy puzzles and just see how they go about doing it, because they are very thorough and very, very rewarding. I feel like not only do you get the reward of I got a gem, but like the, like, I actually solved that. I actually got there. So fun.
That happened to me a lot. That idea of that satisfaction in discovering something that I thought was so secret. And I know, we're, you know, I don't want to give away any puzzle solutions while we're on here. I'm going to try as little as possible to spoil at least solutions. Obviously, we're going to, you know, we might bring up later floors and the themes and stuff like that, because I think we can get into it a little bit. People have been playing it. But there was time early on, Tim, where there was something in glass. Or at least, I shouldn't even say that there was something in glass. There were just glass cases in this particular room. And nothing, they didn't call any attention to themselves. It wasn't like there was a key in there that I had to get, or something shiny, you know, or a gem or even anything like that. But I just wondered if I could do something. And I wondered if the physics of the game allowed for it. Because the game teaches you early on that physics are going to play a part. You know, that very, there's an opening, the little prologue where you're walking around the nice, bright, shiny hotel that's not scary at all. You bump into chairs, they tip over. There's packages that are stacked. If you bump into them, they'll tumble down and maybe the lids will fall off and the contents will spill out. And the game is telling you right off the bat, like, physics matter. And so, you know, if a glass falls off a table, it shatters, or a plate. And so I wondered, like these things aren't, they just look like background objects. And in a different Luigi's Mansion game, they would have been. But the physics really do matter in this game. And when I discovered that I could perform this specific maneuver, oh my gosh, did I feel like that opened up a whole new realm of possibility for every, from then on, I was looking at everything to see what I could do physics-wise to open or get it, you know, get inside everything, absolutely everything.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Would you talk about just how the arsenal that Luigi's been handed has just subtly grown, but how much variety that provides? So in this game, you have everything that you're used to. You've got a flashlight, a vacuum cleaner, and the dark light, I believe, was all you had.
The strobe bulb? You get the flashlight, which is the strobe bulb. So it doesn't work the same as the original Luigi's Mansion where you just had to shine it. It works like Dark Moon.
No,
where
you've got you a had flat. To charge it. Yeah. Which is fine. It adds a little bit more to the combat mechanics.
I like it better. I know some people don't, but I like it better.
I mean, it's a little bit more challenging, which is great. Mm-hmm. What's been added is some functionality to the... But it's not the poltergeist, it's the poltergoo now.
Yeah, Polter G00. Poltergust 00, G00,
So you can do a little burst, which sends stuff flying all around you, and Luigi does a cool little hop. And you can also summon Gooigi, who is a little Jell-O clone. And you also have my favorite, the plunger with rope attachment, which
it's
is
amazing.
Yeah, everything has to get, just in case, I have plunged just about everything in the game.
Yep. I'm a big fan of Gooigi. I love some of the tandem puzzles that they've created where you got to switch back and forth. And like you said, you were talking about earlier how some of the layers have where that you'll affect a certain part of the room with one character, then you send Guiji into the other part, and then he's got to perform a function, and then switch back to Luigi, who's got to do something again. I really like how they were able to do those. It allowed for some pretty creative stuff. Plus, Guiji is involved, and there are boss fights that Guiji gets involved in, and there are times when both of them are needed. Again, I'm going to try not to give away any puzzle solutions. I just thought it was really, really great how they used physics and the space to communicate to you that that Luigi alone wasn't enough to perform a certain function, that he didn't have enough power, and you needed both these guys, and their combined power was going to be the only thing that could get you over this. And they don't communicate to you in any other way. It's never an EGAD message that pops up saying, hey, Luigi, why don't you try this, you know, for those kind of puzzles. It's all visual, and you either sort of put two and two together or you get stuck for a little while. And I know there have been some reviewers who have complained that they got stuck and they didn't like the game because they got stuck, but, you know, it is a puzzle game.
Yeah, and I can understand that being frustrating, but I feel like the game does enough every time to give you a read on everything. I think from the outset, by the time you're on the fifth floor, just trying to in the very, very early game, you can't access part of the floor until, you know, I don't want to give any solutions either, but they indicate how to get to the other side of the fifth floor. If you're experimenting, they don't tell you outright, but you can kind of figure it out spatially. They're giving you clues, just enough clues. And I love that about this game. I love that there's not, I wouldn't even call it hand-holding. There's maybe some clever finger-pointing, but it's very, very subtle. It's done really, really well. Everything feels like self-discovery, and that's invaluable in a game like this.
Yeah, and I think you could point that to, complimenting the people at Next Level on their design, just for how well they did at giving you cues without telegraphing what needs to be done. And obviously, there's different levels of puzzles, right? Because some of them are easier than others. And there's the critical path puzzles, while there are a few challenging ones for sure, I think most people will be able to recognize the critical path stuff pretty easily. They say the toughest stuff for the gems, of course, because that really is the scavenger hunt, right? And any Luigi's Mansion fan will want to hunt down every single gem, like you and me. So, again, some of those puzzles are just ingenious, but they still do a great job at giving you all the tools you need to recognize what looks out of place or what should be interacted with. It's just up to you to spot it, and that's why I think it was so clever of them to pack the rooms full of stuff to distract you with. So, I mean, it's always helpful to clean out a room. I don't know about you, Tim, but man, I left every room spotless. I destroyed everything that I could.
Yeah, and even when revisiting rooms, even though I'd been there and I knew that there was nothing to be gained from it, if anything had respawned, I was like, nah, it's time to smash you again, just in case.
It's hard not to, right? Plus, because it's fun. And you know what? I don't know if you've run across this. One of the weird things, and it just goes to speak towards all the crazy things that you can pull off, right? Like, I wrote in my review that if you think that you should always try to experiment, because if you think you can do something, you probably can, and they probably thought of it already and will have a reward waiting for you. And I just think, have you run across achievements? That was one of the most pleasant surprises that I had. When I tried to do something just sort of goofy and dumb that I figured probably wasn't going to get me anything, it involved, I don't want to give it away because it's an achievement, and I think Nintendo specifically said don't give this away. But anyway, it involved just some sort of physics thing, and I thought, I'm going to do this just because I want to. And then sure enough, they thought of it, and there was an achievement there ready for me.
Which, you also get an achievement. Just collecting gems isn't enough. Every time you get all of those gems, there's a little achievement. Just like letting you know what a champion you are.
Per floor, yep. If you collect them all on the same floor, they'll give you an achievement for it. But it was like little actions, little poking my nose where maybe, you know, it had nothing to do with the rest of the game. And Next Level thought of it. It reminded me a lot of how, in Breath of the Wild, if you climb to the top of that mountain, well, there's probably a Korok up there. There's something up there, right, to reward you for poking your nose where most gamers wouldn't. I love that. I think Next Level did such a great job at rewarding you and just, you know, sort of guiding you, but with, like you said, without holding your hand. They don't hold your hand at all. I love that about this. Now, there are a couple of boss fights. EGAD will, if you're having trouble during a boss fight, EGAD might make a suggestion. But sometimes his suggestions are pretty vague. And he'll tell you, like, all you need to do is this. And you're like, yeah, but how do I do that?
Yeah.
So it's not like they're ever giving anything away. I honestly think that some little kids will have a problem getting past some of these bosses. I'm not sure how many bosses you fought. How far along are you?
Not very. I'm on... What's the level after the shop? I'm on.
So the shop was 3.
Yeah, because you go basement 1, 5, 3.
I think you go to.
Do you go 7 immediately after
6
that?
Or 7 after that? Yeah, you don't go to 4 quite yet.
Yeah.
You hop around a little at the beginning. I will say later in the game, it's just floor by floor. Like, it just goes in order. But, yeah, in the beginning, for some reason, you hop around, which is, you know, is fine. So, yeah, the bosses early on, never really had a problem with them. They were fun, I thought. And some of them had some clever sort of puzzles to figure out. But once you figured it out, it was really easy. Well, the later ones, Tim, oh, boy, there were a couple that I was just cursing with vile, filthy language out loud. Now, I usually, they are fairly generous with the hearts. And yeah, so if you can avoid getting attacked and stay patient, you could probably rebuild your health back up in most boss fights. There were definitely a couple where I sat there thinking, what am I supposed to do? What is it trying to get me to do? And then eventually I figured it out. And there were always little tips. And there were a couple that even when I knew what to do towards the end, there were a couple that even when I knew what to do, it was tough. And I only died at the very end. I think twice.
Spoilers.
Or three times.
Luigi, you heard it here first. Luigi dies. I guess Smash Bros. Already gave that away, huh?
And I think, like, this isn't the point of a Luigi's Mansion game isn't supposed to, like, be this most challenging, you know, stressful game ever. It is all about exploration. And Luigi's Mansion 3, that's why for me it is the ultimate Luigi's Mansion, because no Luigi's Mansion has come close to this level of exploration and discovery and just clever surprises along the way.
Oh, countless. And to your point about the bosses, like, not even before the bosses, I had a run-in with some bats, mm-hmm. and it took me longer than it should have to solve what I was. I was like, oh, did my game just freeze? Like, what's happening?
I like when Luigi gets scared and he freezes and he's walking around like he's stiff as a board.
Yeah.
Now, Tim, that brings up something to me. What do you think of the combat? Because some people have preferred the sort of the fishing real combat of the first one, and I can definitely see the draw in that. The combat in the first one was a little more challenging. It took longer. You weren't surrounded by as many ghosts, but it you know, took a little longer. The combat in here is, I think, personally more entertaining because there's so much more you can do, and it allows them to throw lots of ghosts at you that can make some good chaos. And they've equipped you with everything to handle those hordes of ghosts. But it's a trade-off. Like, you don't get these fishing battles, right, where you're reeling them in and letting them go a little bit and then reeling them in and letting them go a little bit. That doesn't happen as much.
With that sound that you're all hearing in your heads right now, if you've played Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
Kind of like a piano key, sort of like. No, I think I like this better. It's just so satisfying to slam a ghost on the ground.
Oh, God.
And I feel like it rewards you for being a really careful planner on top of that, where it'll surround you, but if you're playing well, then you can kind of, like, damage all of the ghosts and the fight goes a little bit quicker. Because, mm-hmm. like, let's be honest, like, the majority of the fights, there's, what, 7 or so varieties of ghosts. It's mostly the same thing with different held items, but mostly the same thing. So I kind of like that you can be quick and efficient in this one, and it's not as much of a fishing game, but the first game is like, even with all that fishing, it's a 3-hour game, right? There's just less to see in that game. the highlight of this game is the puzzles. The combat is also fun and engaging, and the boss fights have all been super great. Honestly, like a highlight of the game. But that there's more to be seen than just like the run-of-the-mill ghost fights. So I don't mind that being faster. I don't mind. It's satisfying to slam a bunch of ghosts. So I really like it, personally.
Yeah, me too. I think it's very satisfying to slam a ghost into ghosts. And I think that's where your little strategy comes off. That's where I would do the fishing game more, because I would try to position myself. If I latched onto a ghost, I didn't want to start yanking on him if I was surrounded by their ghosts. So I'd let him drag me away to a point where it just passed the crowd of ghosts that were about to attack me. Then I'd stop. Then I'd grab them. Then I'd slam them into that approaching crowd. And it's very, very satisfying. I like it. I get that it's not all that challenging when you're battling a lot of these other ghosts, but I think that it makes for a good change of pace, because it makes things a little more frenzied. There are definitely times when you're going to lose some hearts and stuff like that when you're getting attacked, because some of these ghosts are powerful. Like when they take a chunk out, you know. Yeah. It's not like you just drop 5 hearts or something. Like they'll take 20 from you in one big gouging smash. So yeah, I like the combat quite a bit. I get other people have a preference for this sort of strategic fishing thing. I think there is strategy defined in the combat here as well. And I think that combat trains you for a lot of what you will have to do in boss fights. And later on, when you really are attacked by not just 10 ghosts, not even just 20 ghosts, but lots of ghosts. Like you'll definitely come under assault in different areas.
And I remember they used the mechanics fairly well for the boss fights in the original Luigi's Mansion as you're taking out the family. I cannot say that I remember any of the ghosts from Dark Moon, or any of the bosses, I should say. But I feel like these ones are just leaps and bounds more memorable and more challenging so far. They're just like they are a puzzle in and of themselves, which I love that.
Yeah, I mean that's just more. They're really, really leaning into the puzzle aspect more than anything else, and that includes the boss fights. You're right, Dark Moon. I think I actually touched on this in my review. While I don't think that these bosses will inspire any kind of like fan fiction, but they do have a lot of personality. Regardless, a lot more personality than Dark Moon's bosses. Which were, you know, I mean, they're just not very memorable. Plus, they were also, they weren't very cohesive. Like, Dark Moon was split up. It was split up between 5 different mansions, and each of those mansions had different themes, and it just seemed like, I personally liked that about Dark Moon, that it was split up, and I liked going to the different mansions, but a lot of people didn't, of course, and there are several gameplay reasons for that as well. But it didn't do the bosses any favors as far as making them very memorable or cohesive, like I say. And in this one, because they're all hotel employees, they all seem to fit. Kind of, I guess, like the family of the mansion. Well, these are this is the staff. Everybody in this hotel is staff, from the smaller ghosts to the boss ghosts. And they give those boss ghosts like a lot of personality over whatever floor they have. So you're gonna find like down in the furnace room, you've got the janitor down there, and he's got his own janitor personality. And then there's the super buff fitness guy who, you know, wants you to play water polo with him. And he's got his own personality. So I think that they did at least a really good job with that. And they did a good job of keeping the bosses pretty challenging. You're not going to die on most of them, but there are some later that you absolutely, I think a lot of people will have problems with, especially kids. There were certainly some where I had to sort of walk away and take a good look at what was happening, because I had, if you rush in with a lot of these bosses, they will chew you up and spit you out. They can definitely take off chunks, and you sort of have to take a good look at a step back and see what the game is asking you to do. See what the sort of the puzzle of the boss is. And I like that. It made for a lot of entertaining boss battles, including one that I think we've touched on on the movie set, which is just absolutely pure joyous, you know, love of movies, yeah. And monsters. But yeah, I think that overall that everything's a lot more, it just sort of all flows much better together. And that includes the bosses.
Yeah, it's very Zelda-esque in that they're combative, but you're also still solving a boss. You had highlighted that there's a lot of cohesion here, and everyone's an employee, and I've just got to say that I love that about this game. I know in your review you talked about how the floors seem seamless because of the elevator, but I love the tiny details that, like, this is a ghost hotel, but it's also a ghost's hotel. Like, this is a hotel for spirits. And I think that's so funny. I think that, like, the subtle indicators that, you know, Luigi is intruding here, I think it's great. I really, really love this thematically. And it's such a clever spin on kind of the haunted hotel motif.
Oh, in the very beginning, I think it's absolutely hilarious. Like, when you see what's going on, like, you'll see what's going on right away at the beginning when everything supposedly looks all nice and you're talking to a bellhop. I mean,
yeah,
it's just, it's really, really well done. The details that they put into this, this game really is about the details, and the details contribute to everything. They contribute to the look, which is luscious. They contribute to the puzzles and how your ability to solve them, you know, comes about. And it's because you have to pay attention to details. And those same details will distract you from puzzles. Everything's about the details, right down to, like, just the atmospheric, the funny little animations. I love seeing the rats claw at the floor as you're sucking them up into the poltergeist, you know, or other enemies react to it. Like, you know, I mean, I like when they've got items on and you strobe bubble them in the face and you realize, oh, they've got sunglasses or they've got a pot in front of their face or things like that. I just, all the different little animations play so well into creating this atmosphere.
Yeah, the ghosts in general just are so well animated. And if you find the opportunity to peek in at some of them, you'll get some really, really funny little vignettes that I just laugh out loud funny stuff. Yeah, atmosphere, 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 which is just right for Luigi's Mansion.
Atmosphere and exploration, like the details, the exploring of this hotel. That, to me, is the essence of what Luigi's Mansion should become. And I know it started out originally as a ghost-busting game, and that's fine. Like, it was brand new. But to me, I see the original Luigi's Mansion now as, like, a proof of concept, kind of, or as a beta to what the series has now become, what Next Level Games has taken it to, starting with Dark Moon. I think this is a puzzle game. This is an exploration game. This is a discovery game now, a franchise. I think they've gone down the right path. And whether or not you can definitely argue, like, okay, the vibe's not as creepy and maybe you want a creepier vibe. That's cool. I understand that. I understand if it's a little too cartoony now for some people and they prefer sort of the musty cobwebs and stuff like that as opposed to what we have now. I think there are some very cool, creepy things in this game. And I think when you walk down a hallway and you turn a corner and there's a broom standing on its end just by itself, I think that's a nice little creepy touch that they provide. But I think the essence of the Luigi's Mansion franchise should be this exploration, this discovery, these puzzles, this detail, this atmosphere. I love it. I think this is the culmination of what they learned between the first two. And to me, hands down, not even close, this is by far the best in the franchise for me. And I really hope they continue down this path in just a multitude of different locations. I could think up 100 right now off the top of my head for them to go in. I think this franchise should become a major franchise, not just a once every 10 years franchise.
Yeah, there is something to be said about the original and exploring an old dark house. Like, there is something very special about that game, and that it is so concise, and it does just feel like you are taking a walk through a haunted mansion. That's fantastic. But this game is absolutely the evolution of Luigi's Mansion, and I think that it is the groundwork for, excuse me for saying it, just more and more additions and floors to this franchise. I honestly feel that. I think Luigi's Mansion 4 can't come soon enough because I love Luigi's Mansion 3 so much. And Patrick, you said Funhouse. The game says Scream Park. I'm ready for a haunted theme park. I mean, there are plenty of urban legends out there. Let's make it a game.
I think that would be great. And imagine going Luigi in the Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, so good.
What could be done with that? All the different places in a theme park carnival.
Carnival of Souls.
And all the games. All the little carny games that Luigi could interact with. Oh, that would be a brilliant one, Tim. That would be absolutely fantastic. Yeah. But I would take any horror setting, too. Like, be it a summer camp or, you know, anything. I'll take any horror setting. An insane asylum. Now, that would be probably a little too dark for Nintendo, but yeah, which one?
Just in a sewer system, getting chased by a clown. Too far.
maybe they wouldn't go quite that far. I hope we don't have to wait as long for the next one, because this to me was, they just found the sweet spot, I think. And man, it just made me want another one. And as soon as I completed this, I have found every gem. I found every boo. And I wanted to go back and start a new file and just play from scratch again. It took me about 20 to 25 hours to find everything. And which is plenty of time. That's without that's without Scream Park or without the tower.
It's not an immense undertaking, but there's a pun right there. It is thorough, though. It is an experience.
20 to 25 hours is enough for a game. There's plenty to replay here. You can go back and you can play online with people in the tower, and you can collect the rare ghosts, by the way. The only place that you can do that is in the tower. So for those completionists, like, you are going to have to play online because you're going to want those rare ghosts, right? So, yeah, there's plenty of stuff to do, but the replay to me was just in how much fun the main game was. I just wanted to start it all over again, and I still want to right now. Like, just talking about it, I want to go play Luigi's Mansion, even though I have other things to play.
Yeah, I totally understand that, and I have just got to give this game my recommendation. If you have not picked up Luigi's Mansion 3, so far, it's my game of the year. I'm just going to say that. It might change by the end of the year, but this is one to remember. I think this is one of the most fun Switch titles there is. So, Patrick, you haven't played any of this game's co-op yet, have you?
I have not, no.
So, with that in mind, it did kind of inspire us that there are a lot of good co-op puzzle games out there, including this one, though neither of us have played it co-op. So we're going to take a break. Again, seriously, go buy Luigi's Mansion. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about co-op puzzle games, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N Express. We're at our final segment. Patrick, on top of Luigi's Mansion and writing the review for Goomba Stomp, which listeners should go read right now, you also have been playing Trine, you brought up.
Yeah, I was thinking about co-op puzzle games, and even though I didn't get to play Luigi's Mansion as a co-op game, I like when people develop co-op games for solo play as well. And after listening to Campbell review Trine 4, and I've just had my eye on Trine for quite a while now, and I just never took the plunge. But the collection came up, so I bought the Trine Collection, which has 1 through 4. I bought the physical copy. It's very strange because they give you a cartridge, but it only has Trine 4 on it. And then they give you a download code that has Trines 1 through 4. So I actually have downloaded Trine 4. And I still have this cartridge that I'm never going to use because I don't need to. Yeah, very strange. I mean, obviously, I'll just sell the cartridge back, but it only has Trine 4 on it. So I'm not really sure. The case will be kind of pointless because it says Trine Collection. That's beside the point. Anyway. So, it got me interested in Trine, and I love puzzle games, period. Which is why I love Luigi's Mansion 3 so much. I mean, here's my quick experience. This also got me thinking. Playing Trine got me thinking about co-op puzzle games specifically, because now I've only beat Trine 1, the original Trine, Enchanted Edition. And my first thought was, well, this isn't a puzzle game. Trine 1, for anybody looking for co-op puzzle games, I just want to warn you right now, it's not a puzzle game at all. Like, it has the amount of puzzles that a Mario game would have in it, and I would never call Mario games puzzlers. So it's basically an awkward platforming game that at the time was pretty because we didn't have a lot of indie games, and this one they actually spent some time on. Fine. I can't say it was altogether a very pleasant experience. I will never play Trine 1 ever again. I only powered through it because I bought this thing and I was going to move on to the next one. Now, Trine 2, in my brief experience with that game, I've just started that one. That seems to be a little more along the puzzle lines. It's still got the combat and some of the goofy, awkward platforming, but it also has a lot more puzzle-ish specs. So I'm hoping that's the way the series continues. I don't know, but it got me thinking about co-op puzzle games that I've really liked in the past and what they do really well, and the ones that just focus on puzzles, I think, which are great. Like we talked about earlier this year, the Box Boy plus Box Girl. I think the co-op stuff in that is brilliant. You can play it alone, and I had a blast playing it alone, but I had my nieces come over and play that game, and they were thrilled. Like, they loved it. Obviously, it had a Box Girl, so of course they liked that. But and they were fighting over who got to be Box Girl because nobody wanted to be Box Boy. Poor Box Boy. But
what's wrong with QB girls? Come on.
I know, right? QC's fine. Isn't that her name? Cutie? Or is it Cutie? No, Cutie's the baby. No, Cutie is the rectangle guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, QC's her name, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. So I think, like, that game did a brilliant job of allowing you to play these sort of it created box puzzles that required two different box people to do. And that was that was a really fun co-op game. Another one that I wanted to bring up from earlier this year that I touted, and I think still deserves recognition, especially for people who are interested in Trine, like who haven't played a Trine game, but think, oh, maybe that seems like a co-op puzzle game that I might like. Degrees of Separation is what, in my mind, what like Trine should have been as far as how it handles puzzles. I wish Trine was more puzzle centric than platforming and combat.
Yeah.
And Degrees of Separation is. It is just simply a puzzle game, but it has sort of that similar sort of medieval, and a lush painterly style to it. It's not the same visual style, but it has a very similar fairy tale quality because it's being narrated throughout as you walk along. A narrator is actually narrating what you're doing often. And it's a very sweet story, very sincere. There's no snark or sarcasm or whatever in it. I liked that. It was straight up fairy tale that I thought was interestingly told. I think that the narration actually added to the vibe, but it's a straight up puzzler. And it is one of the most clever puzzle games and one of the most satisfying puzzle games. I actually played it through twice. I 100% it the second time because you're collecting scarves. The puzzles are all about collecting scarves, and scarves function kind of like stars in a Mario game. They allow you to go through doors into the next world to do puzzles in. There's a hub world that's in a castle, and there's a dragon, and there's all sorts of stuff like that. Anyway, that's what Trine got me thinking about, and I really wanted to tell, like, if you're looking for a co-op puzzle game, Degrees of Separation. Such a wonderful co-op puzzle game. And the last one I want to bring up was, stuff like Affordable Space Adventures, which you can play sort of co-op. It's a little weird because you've got two people controlling the engine of this vehicle But it works, and it can be a lot of fun as you're kind of yelling at each other. It makes it seem like you're actually in control of this vehicle that's kind of crapping out on you. and you've got to put out fires constantly, right? You've got to lower the sound output. You've got to intensify the electrical output. You've got to ditch the lights. You've got to find extra power somewhere. You're like Scotty in the Enterprise. You know, you're just trying to find extra power somewhere by lowering something else. Or you're like that guy in Apollo 13, right? As they're trying to get to their 21 amps or whatever it was. And anybody who hasn't seen Apollo 13, you should go watch that movie. Yeah, so those are examples of some really fun recent and maybe not so recent affordable space adventures came out for the Wii U, so that was a while ago, but co-op adventures that I have really, really liked.
Yeah, I feel like co-op puzzle games are just too far, few and far between. I think you mentioned Box Boy and Box Girl. We just brought that up on Game Boys this week when we were talking about the 20 games to play before 2020, and I honestly think that's up there for just exceptional co-op games. I think thinking back to the beginning of the Switch, I know this was a long time ago, 2017, Patrick, Journey back with me, just something that is completely distinct and there's no other game like it and I want more of it and I think it's due for a sequel, Snipperclips.
Oh, yes. Yes, didn't even think about that one. That's a great example.
Just so distinct, so unique, and right at home on the Switch. I frequently think about that game because it kind of gave me flashbacks to some of my other favorite puzzle games like World of Goo, but it was cooperative, right? You're just trying to solve these little puzzles together, and I found that really, really engaging and like such a fun experimental game the whole way through. So I would highly, highly recommend that.
And cooperation is required in that game, which is such a great thing. That something I feel is lacking from the Trine games, at least from Trine 1 for sure and Trine 2, is that, yes, you have to use the different powers of people, but I don't feel like you interact with each other. That cooperation, one person might have to do one thing that gets everybody past. Right. And it's not like two of you have to do something at the same time. That level of cooperation, like Snipperclips, requires you both to be on the same page and moving and snipping and performing activities at the same time. True cooperation in order to solve some of those puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, you're both kind of cheating the system and trying to see what you can get away with. And I feel like that's similar to Box Boy and Box Girl. Sometimes half the fun is trying to work your way around the actual puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to get away, seeing what you can actually get away with and trying to break the world and its mechanics is always so fun. And that kind of thing is so much more enjoyable together. So definitely check those out. I feel like the Switch is home to a lot of great cooperative puzzle games, including Luigi's Mansion 3 now. So there's no shortage if that's something that interests you, as it does both Patrick and I. So, Patrick, thank you for being here tonight and talking Luigi's Mansion with me. Where can we find you online?
You can, of course, always find me at goombastomp.com. I write a lot for Sword Cinema, but I, of course, also write game reviews, and I'll have, I wrote Luigi's Mansion review. Definitely check that out if you want my complete thoughts on it. I'll be doing some other indie reviews as the month goes on, but check out our movie section as well if you're into movies, and you should be. Rick brought up The Seventh Seal, Ingmar Bergman, Max von Sydow, Night Plays Chess with Death. Check out Sordid Cinema, our movie section. We got a lot of great stuff over there. Always got a lot of great movies coming out and reviews. We review everything from the big ones to a lot of stuff you've probably never even heard of that's brand new. That maybe you should, if you're into movies, you should check out. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Sordid Cinema.
Yeah, not to toot our own horn, but it's just a great place to spend your lunch break. I feel like I'm always on there discovering something. Like, very recently, there was an article, I'm totally blanking on who actually wrote it, but there was a big article on the Grudge movies I had never watched. I'd seen one of them, and so it was interesting to hear the perspective of someone who was clearly a fan of the franchise, and I feel like that's just one example of countless examples of Goomba Stomp and what we have to offer especially our film section, has got a lot of unique, distinct personalities and
mega preferences.
And yeah.
That Grudge article, Tim, that was not just about like the Grudge movies you guys might have seen. That was about the origins of the Grudge, and it's going to be a continuing series that hasn't even reached the Grudge that most people know. It's actually
one, yeah.
It started with the original short films that the creator of the Grudge had made, and it goes on from them because they're all tied together, and it's trying to create like a history of the Grudge.
Yeah, which then I had to wait for my daughter to take a nap so I could watch those shorts.
Yeah, we definitely like check out stuff like that. That's a great article.
And yeah, fascinating. And I had no idea because, again, it's foreign and it had gotten so out of control. I just assumed it was like the equivalent of our Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a million of them now. It's probably garbage. But no, like, there's actually continuity and it seems really, really interesting now. So I've got questions, and I can't wait to read more. So check that out on Goomba Stomp. I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. Check out my other show, Game Boys, all about co-op. If you like puzzle games, we mentioned a couple. Again, we did, but we covered the last 4 years and went over the 20 greatest games to play before 2020, and it was just a really fun segment. I had fun listening back when I was editing, so hopefully you get a kick out of that if you do go and listen. But thank you for being here and listening to our discussion of Luigi's Mansion. If you did like this talk, go ahead and go to Apple Podcasts, wherever you do listen. Drop us a review, a rating. It really does open up doors, helps us get new codes, because it's hard to afford all these games and movies. So help us out. Help us get codes. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week for something totally different. I don't know what yet. The week after that, though, you can bet we're going to be starting our discussion of Pokemon, whether Patrick is ready or not. And I cannot wait. But for now, we're going to get going. I've got a spooky hotel to go clean up. So we'll talk to you later.